promenade across the floor, sashay right on out the door, out the door and into the glade, and everybody promenade.
You're tuned to the Square Dance Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012.
And you're listening to the Do-Si-Do Show, episode number 35.
Hi, I'm your host, Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland.
And I'm Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Hello, Dale, and hello, Square Dance community. Today, we're pleased to present the first part of our interview with Roy and Betsy Gatta from New Jersey.
Yeah, I've known Roy and Betsy for quite some time, have heard a number of their stories, and really looking forward to them sharing and then hearing more.
Yes, they've been involved in this activity a long time. We're going to hear all about that, I'm sure.
So what'd you do this past weekend, Barb?
This past weekend, lots of time with family and friends. Got to go to the movie, got to see mom a couple days, and we sang in church, so it was a fun, not too difficult weekend. What'd you do this past weekend?
I
know part.
Yeah, I danced at AC/DC.
How'd you do?
Yes, I suppose being a caller, that's a reasonable question to ask.
We always wonder.
Had a very good time Friday evening. Saturday, I had a dance call in Pennsylvania, so we didn't go. The dance was great fun. The very, very, very first caller I ever heard call 31 years ago was at the dance. This is the first time he'd heard me call.
Oh.
I didn't recognize him. And somebody said, it's great to have Dave Crater here. And I said, where? And so I had to tell everybody the story of, you know, my parents leaving the three-quarter dance that Dave was calling. They picked me up at the turnpike exit, drove back and finished the dance and said, doesn't this look like a really good time? And I said, yeah, it's a great time, except that guy up there, he gets to tell people what to do, and I want to do that.
Very good, yeah.
So, and got the pictures, and so I sent pictures to my mom, and I said, Mom, do you know who these folks are? And she goes, they sure look familiar, but I don't know who they are. And who'd you like to say hello to, Barb?
My friends Tom and Jill, and Tom's brother Bill and his wife Diane and their families. The guys lost their mom this past weekend, and they had just lost their dad 6 weeks ago. So it's hard to say goodbye to a loved one.
Mm.
And you?
I would like to say a big thanks to the AC/DC organizing committee. They run a spectacular weekend. They've been doing a great job for years, and this year was no exception. So let's get right to it. Let's get Roy and Betsy on the phone. Today we have Betsy Gatta and Roy Gatta on the phone with us. Betsy and Roy, where are each of you originally from?
New Jersey.
Both of us are from New Jersey. I grew up in Palmyra, New Jersey.
And I grew up first in Highland Park, which is right near where I live now, and then in down towards the Cherry Hill area in a town called Haddon Heights.
I'm not sure whether it is southern New Jersey, northern New Jersey.
We're currently in kind of north central New Jersey. North Brunswick is, if you look at the map of the state where it kind of comes in on the right as you face it, that's us.
Okay.
Technically, most people refer to it as central Jersey. Rutgers University is one town over.
And we're about 45 minutes from New York City and about an hour and a quarter from Philadelphia.
Got it. This Friday when I'm driving up to Connecticut to call, I'll wave as I go by.
Wave, yes.
Just wave as you go through exit 9.
Oh, that's good to know. That's the one reference.
Yes, if you need to stop on the way back, get off at exit 9.
Coffee, bathroom, whatever. Right.
Right.
Okay. Before you two were bitten by the square dance and round dancing bugs, what jobs did you hold?
For me, there was no before that I held a job. I actually started square dancing when I was 5.
Wow.
And I started calling when I was 14. Now, I did hold another job. I was not a full-time caller for all of my career. I was there, worked for the welfare department.
What kind of work did you do for them?
Paperwork.
All right.
Basically, I worked in what they called income maintenance, which means that we did the paperwork to determine eligibility for some of the entitlement programs, as they call them. I finished as a supervisor in a Medicaid program.
And you, Roy, do you have any other jobs?
Oh, yeah. I started out, I had a degree in landscape architecture, and I was a landscape contractor for about 12 years. And then I got tired of working 65 hours a week, and I just one day quit all of it, went out and found a job as a teacher. Took me 2 days to do that. Ended up with a master's degree in vocational agriculture and taught that for 25 years.
Wow.
It feels like there'd be a connection between round dancing and the creativity there and the creativity of landscape architecture. Do you feel that at all, or are they really two totally separate places?
No, they were really very separate. Later on, there was a much bigger connection between teaching round dancing and teaching school.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about your family?
We have a cat. Other than that, we don't have a family at this point.
We don't have children. It was not a conscious decision, just something that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And our parents are all gone. What we have is kind of an extended family among the square dance world.
Yeah.
You know, I have a brother and a sister. My brother's in Montana. My sister's in Tennessee. I'm the oldest. I'm the oldest everything in my family. It's a little scary at a month short of 61, I'm already the patriarch. All of my aunts, uncles, grandparents, they're all gone. But they all smoked and I don't.
That'll help, yeah.
Yeah. So, very small in the way of blood relatives, but of course we have the whole extended square dance family.
And Betsy, do you have any brothers and sisters?
No, I'm an only child. I have some cousins, first cousins that I keep in touch with, but they're not really close. Other than that, basically, as I said, the square dance, you know, we're Aunt Betsy and Uncle Roy to a lot of people.
That's wonderful. Well, so let's talk a little bit about square dancing. When and how did each of you get involved in square and round dancing?
Okay. My parents square danced. And the guy who taught them to dance had a program for children at the YMCA in Metuchen, New Jersey. I started dancing there and have never given it up.
Hmm.
And basically, I was probably 5 going on 6 when I started. He used to do things on a Friday night. I think he probably had a three-layered program for different age groups. I don't remember exactly. All I know is my parents could pick me up from my session and go to their dance, so it must have been pretty early. I would go with my parents to a square and folk dance camp. This was back in the 1950s, so the square dance and conjure dance and folk dance worlds weren't as separate as they are now. And so this one camp, it had pretty much anything connected with square dancing. It was international folk dancing, square dancing, round dancing, conjure dancing, and that's what I did when I was younger, and so that's what I grew up doing.
Makes sense that you are where you are today. And you're right.
I was a junior in college. I had a girl that I was pretty much intending to marry. She joined the Rutgers Promenader Square Dance Club, and I was kind of a horrible boyfriend. One of those, I didn't want to square dance, but I knew what time the square dance ended, and I felt she knew what time she should be back to her dorm and didn't want her going to the bars afterwards with all those people. But in order to keep the peace, the next season, in the spring of 72, I went to square dance lessons with her. And then in the middle of the lessons, she dumped me. married a trombone player I went to high school with. We were from the same high school.
And he came back next year and learned to dance.
Yeah, and then
kicking and screaming.
So I quit. I said, I don't need this. I mean, the lessons were a massive 10 weeks long back then.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at college you could learn all the way through the mainstream in 10 weeks because learning was your business.
Right.
And so the club did actually 2 classes each year, 1 each semester. So I quit, and then on one of the campus buses, one of the girls convinced me to come back to the club. So I came back to the club, found out I liked it, dated most of the girls in the club, and then married the teacher. And she was the teacher for the club.
I think that's perhaps a new tagline for square dancing. Date all the girls in the club and marry the teacher.
Well, you know, we were the right age. we had a lot of romances come out of that particular club. And Northern New Jersey just recently in their magazine, they had, the president or past president had an idea to do a story about romances that came about in square dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And how many did they have? 20?
They had 20. They called it was their Valentine's issue. They had 20 couples and 11 of them came out of our club.
Wow.
Some of them had quit. Some of them belonged to other clubs. Now they had quit dancing and then got back into it when they, you know, their careers were settled or their kids were gone or whatever. But they learned to dance at Rutgers. They got married because of it and stayed together and then came back into square dancing.
Wow. Nice.
That's great. What magazine is that?
The Grand Square.
Is that available online?
Archives are. I think it is, yes.
I believe older issues are, yes.
It might be the current issues, too. I don't know. Try NNJSDA.org.
Oh, that's great. That seems like that'd be a great article to read. And although I'm not in Northern New Jersey, I could certainly add to that list.
We're seeing a lot of that where it is a social networking system where you actually have real contact with people, and we're seeing more of that coming back into the activity, and especially we're seeing now a lot of, you know, we had all these marriages come out of, you know, basically young people. We were a college club, but we're seeing more and more, well, you see it, I'm sure, all the time too, older people who have now suddenly single again, and they're finding partners through square dancing.
Yeah, it's a great activity for it. You're holding somebody's hand for a couple hours a night, and it's a social venue that's fun. That's gonna
without
be
pressure.
Yeah.
And both Barb and I found our second loves through square dancing.
Uh-huh. Yep, I married my teacher too.
Good deal.
And how and when did you two start calling and queuing?
Okay, I started calling in 1962. I had the dance camp I mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
Had offered a caller school. And when I was 11, which was before 62, but when I was 11, I went through the caller school with my dad, called one dance, and successfully. I went outside and cried for half an hour and said, I'll never do that again.
And it was successful.
Yeah, I know, but I was a shy kid, and it was just too much pressure in being in front of the public.
I could see that.
But fast forward to the national convention in Miami, Florida, in the youth room, there was a girl caller, and she kind of had a little bit of an attitude about, I'm a caller, la-di-da. And I had a cute boy from Florida that I was dancing with, and I wanted to impress him, so I said, well, I could do that. Went home. My dad had a teenage club, and I told him I wanted to start calling again. End of story.
Yeah.
I never saw the boy again. I think the girl got married and dropped out of square dancing about 2 years later. So here I am.
I hope she hears this interview someday.
Yeah. I'll get my 50-year certificate this year at Colorado.
Wow. Wonderful.
I'm really old.
No, you're not.
Yeah. We, I forget where, but we weren't married yet, but we saw round dancing. We were engaged. It was 10 round dance lessons. And we took them with George and the Alperts. I think they're still around down in Florida, but we took lessons here in Jersey and Princeton. And so we did a little bit of round dancing, and then one of the students at the Rutgers Promenaders got interested in teaching round dancing, and he was starting to teach round dancing. Back then, you would learn a couple dances and just memorize them.
Mm-hmm.
Queuing was just evolving a little more back then, but there were still some...
In the mid-70s.
Yeah, there were still some clubs that actually they would learn a dance and then just memorize it. So he was teaching round dancing, and then came the next year, September rolled around, and everybody said, where's...
So-and-so. I don't remember his name.
I don't remember his name. But we graduated, got a job out in Syracuse. So, and then they all said, well, what are we going to do about round dancing? We were starting to like that. And they looked at me and said, well, why don't you teach round dancing? I says, why the heck should I teach round dancing? I says, well, you and Betsy are the only ones that know how to, and she's got all the equipment. So I became a cure.
Good answer.
By default.
By default.
That was 1978.
So, Roy, who were your mentors?
I had two. I had Doc and Peg Terrell, who were legends in the Round Dance community. They won all the high awards from Round the Lab.
They were the charter members.
They were some of the founding members of Round the Lab. Mm. And we lost Doc a few years ago. Peg is still around. And then I had a fellow who was a caller and a cure. He was a caller, and his wife was a cure. His name was Bob. No, he was a cure also, I think.
Yeah,
Bob
he was
Kellum.
One of the old school. But
Bob
they both...
Kellogg. When he died, his wife took over cueing. His name was Bob Kellogg. And then when I needed more advice, more technical advice, I had Ron Rumble in the area, who was actually a friend, and I could call him for advice. So I had two of the giants in the activity for mentors, and they... Mm-hmm. And an incredibly good teacher who actually let me audit some of his classes when I was learning to teach rounds. That was Bob Kellogg. So I had a distinct advantage when I was learning my craft.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. And since we're talking about mentors, are there people who would say that you were their mentor?
Yes, I've had at least two who basically I had a direct influence on. They wanted to learn to cue, so I would bring them to my classes, and basically I would let them teach, like I'm sure you've done with some of the callers. My basic training philosophy was they would get to teach the review each week, so mm-hmm. that they saw me teach it the first time, and then they would review it the following.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And so I've had... two people that I've pretty much brought into the activity. I'd love to be able to bring some more in because they're dwindling quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And a third one was, I really didn't mentor her, but she said she got into cueing because it just looked like I was having so much fun.
And Betsy, who were your mentors in square dancing?
Okay. Well, the man who taught the collar school at the dance camp was a man named Ricky Holden, who goes way, way back. He was the first editor of American Square Dance magazine that became the current magazine. And he was a longtime caller. And of course I had my dad as a mentor. The first place I went to collar school other than with Ricky Holden, you know, after I really became serious, was Dick and Artie Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dick Jones is from New Jersey.
Are there callers who would point to you as their mentor?
Yeah.
Or how many, we should ask, how many callers could point to you as their mentor?
Well, there would be a lot that I have touched through caller school. Yeah, because
sure.
I run a caller school with Tom Miller every fall.
Mm-hmm.
And we have how many years now, Roy?
Six.
So there's a lot through there. But even before that, there were people I worked with one-on-one, because that's partly how I got the hours to start becoming an accredited caller coach, mm-hmm. was they allow you, if you have mentored people one-on-one, that time counts.
I would easily say, though, the ones that she has directly influenced and work with is certainly in the double digits.
Yeah.
Trying to run through all of them through my head, and I'm thinking, wow, this caller and that caller and that caller.
Yeah.
Over a long career, it adds up.
Sure.
And of course, there's always still learning. I'm always touting her. I mean, here she's getting her 50-year certificate, and on Wednesday nights, right now, she's going to a caller school.
The local concert caller is offering a caller's workshop. And what he has that I need is working with the bands. I'm taking the whole class.
Oh, good for you.
Wonderful.
I'm going to do a guest spot at Princeton Country Dancers this coming Wednesday.
Wow.
One of the people that I know I influenced, and I'm proud to say, is Dan Koff. And he and I work together at Rutgers Pollinators now. Once my dad passed away, It was like, I called for a while on my own at Rutgers, and I'm going, this isn't any fun. It was more fun when we had a couple of us.
Yeah.
So we alternate and sometimes work together.
That's great.
You know, I'm going to interject here, because you were talking about mentors, but, you know, you think of the mentoring and like when you're just kind of learning the craft, but you had a lot of mentors when you were learning challenge and stuff
right.
like that, especially Mike Jacobs.
And Bruce Bush.
Mm, yes.
Huge influences on Betsy's moving through the advanced and challenge programs.
Well, since you brought that up, can you talk about what they gave you and what you learned really as a primary difference between mainstream plus advanced programs and the challenge programs?
Well, basically, as I see it, the difference between calling one program and another is learning how to use the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a vocabulary of words that we can use and put together, and I'm going to quote Mike here in the communication. He used to say that a sequence was like a sentence, and then a tip would be like a paragraph, and the whole dance would be the book or the short story, and you're communicating. And if you don't know how to use the vocabulary, then you don't speak well or you don't write well. So what they gave me, and it started with Bruce Bush, who was originally from Wisconsin and then moved to New Jersey and was pretty well known for a while in the challenge field. Basically what Bruce did for me was he, as I was going to focus on advanced, learning advanced first, he was doing lessons and he had me teach one call per night for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would give me feedback. But what it meant was I got to be able to, in a comfortable and contained environment, I got to teach with the knowledge that if I didn't do exactly what the dancers needed, there was somebody there to pick up the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to when we used to advise callers to go out and get a class to learn how to teach, which is like the blind leading the blind, the recipe for disaster, I believe, now. So this was no recipe for disaster because this was a contained environment. But Bruce was also at that point selling the tapes to people who didn't have advanced callers. And so it also got my name out throughout the country. I got a phone call from somebody. When the national convention was going to be in Seattle, I got a phone call from somebody about whether or not I'd call in the advance hall, and I was introducing myself. He says, Betsy, I know you. I run a tape group, and I use Bruce Bush's tapes. I've heard you for the last couple of years.
You forget that you're out there in ways you don't know.
Yeah.
I just never
crossed my mind.
Sure.
And Mike basically, now, I have to step back. Okay, Mike's first wife, Patty, was in our teen club that I started calling at that my dad taught, and my dad taught Mike's first wife to dance. We took her to her first national convention in Louisville in 1970, where I believe she met Mike. And so the whole group is intertwined forever.
Yes.
And
there would be no Christy without you.
Right. And so, Mike provided a constant kind of feedback. He would be encouraging and he would talk to me about what I had done right or wrong, whether or not I wanted to hear it.
Weren't you calling longer than he was at that point?
Yeah, but he had come up quickly through the advanced and challenge world,
oh,
and that
the
was a new world to
program.
Me.
Yeah.
It's a different place.
Uh-huh.
The challenge world is a different place. And you need to have the same skills, but then a different focus.
Mm-hmm.
I do not always have the instinct that some of the challenge people want to be. I don't want to say they want to be broken down, but they want to be challenged almost to their extremes.
I see. Yes.
And I don't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike would be telling me what I should and shouldn't do.
Call harder.
Well, Mike often referred to when you were calling challenge, you have to do a triage, and there are certain parts that you just have to kind of let
go. They're going
to
die.
They're not.
No matter what you do.
And that was difficult for Betsy to comprehend because she wanted everybody to be successful all the time. And that isn't necessarily what the challenge world wanted.
You have to let some go, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I still have trouble with that.
Yeah. I can appreciate that.
Do you psych call your challenge? Do you write most of it? When you say you want to let them go, do you, does that mean you call slower with the same cards that you had or switch to a different set of cards?
Oh, it depends on the program. I am comfortable psych calling easily through C1. I can psych call C2. When I get to C3A and 3B, I'm definitely on cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm on the cards, I may be calling slower. I may direct the dancers or like tell them what they need to have. When the squares that are getting it don't need that.
I see.
And, you know, I'm much more helpful. I probably have the absolute most trouble in the world when I'm assigned to call the, take no prisoners hours.
Oh.
I want to have mercy.
Right.
I want to take a prisoner or two.
That could be the new name. Instead of take no prisoners, just have no mercy.
Yeah, have no mercy. I want to have mercy.
Mm.
I pretty much psych call everything through C1. C2, I have cards and do some psych. 3A and 3B, I'm all on cards.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I also don't do those often enough to be comfortable psyching.
I see.
And some, especially challenged dancers, think that you might be able to write a more interesting program on cards than you could psych call.
Oh, yes.
That you can put different things together and think about it longer.
Actually, excuse me, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to write easy enough sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
You can write killer cards.
Yeah. So, Betsy, you were mentioning the teach tapes that you did through Bruce Bush. Can you tell us a little bit about the teach videos? What are the origins there and how did they come about to be?
Oh, sure. I took over teaching a class when a caller moved away. And there was a couple in this class, Ralph and Marilyn, and he traveled a lot. He was an attorney and he traveled a lot, missed a lot of lessons. And they were motivated to learn to dance, so they bought somebody's teaching tapes that were out on the market at that point in time, looked at each other and said, oh, you know, Betsy's a better teacher and we can do this better. And they were the impetus behind us making the first video. And we wanted to do it. We looked at what was on the market and we said, well, these are the things we want to do differently. And the first thing that we made sure of was it was done in a professional studio. With professional cameramen. One of them, I think it was the second one, we had a cameraman who was basically off work because NBC cameramen were on strike.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to make it a home video. We hired a producer, director, we had makeup artists, lighting professionals. It was a big budget
thing.
And a script. It's really awful working off a script. Because I'm used to going, well, this is this and that, and I had to stick to the words or the director didn't know where we were.
Oh.
And I learned to use a teleprompter. We had three cameras. One was focused on me with a teleprompter. One was focused on the dancers, and then there was one hanging from the ceiling so we could get direct overhead shots.
Wow.
And so I learned to basically hit my mark and use a teleprompter.
You could be on TV.
And,
oh, you have been.
Yeah. And so the first video we decided to do was Mainstream because the last part of Mainstream, which is quote Mainstream, you know, the first part of Mainstream is Basic up through Ferris Wheel. Well, the last part from Cloverleaf to Recycle is some of the harder figures and they get the least amount of practice.
Yes.
So they needed the video on that to stay in dancing. At least that was my logic.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did that was different on the videos is the number of people needed to do a call were the number of people on camera as we taught the call.
Right.
So if it was something like touch a quarter, where you needed two people facing. There were two people facing on camera when we talked about you step forward, you take hands, blah, blah, blah. And then after the teach, we would bring a square out and do one sequence, so about 30 seconds or so, drill that used the call that would have been introduced and any previous calls as many different ways as I could conceive of that would be practical. And so people could watch it, and then they could follow. We had the couples in different colors, so we could follow the one color.
Yeah, very good. How many of these are there?
There are four. We did three of them back in the late 80s. I mean, it was so long ago when we made the first one, you could actually buy a beta version.
Oh.
Beta.
That'll beta.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we did mainstream, and then we did plus, and then we did the second half of the basic. Once again, since they were designed they weren't designed to replace a caller. They were designed to be reference material for the dancers. We figured, okay, this were the ones where they would need the most help. And then the last one, the first half of basic, we made.
Julie was probably 10 or 11, so 5, 6 years.
Yeah, I was thinking 6, 7 years ago when we didn't think people in square dance lessons really needed that one, but it was designed hopefully to market to schools and churches because Betsy started working in schools and realized they were still using like 78 records and some really awful stuff. So we haven't really found the right way to get them into the schools yet. That's kind of one of our next projects. But so the first one, the first half of basic was the last one we made, and it was a good 15 years after we made almost 20 years after we made the first one.
Nice.
Because that one has some of our second generation in it.
Yeah.
Mm, fun.
Yeah.
Children of the people who were in the first video are in the last video.
along with some of their parents.
And since then, initially we had, the partners, Ralph and Marilyn, and then they eventually drifted away from square dancing. So then we basically just bought out their interest in the company, and we have the sole ownership of it.
Did you use 8 dancers, or did you have more than 8?
More than 8. Uh-huh. We rotated them in throughout the day because we did the filming. We did the filming all in one day in the studio.
Oh.
Because basically we couldn't afford more. And the first one we made, I probably look like I'm petrified in the beginning because I was. Because the professional TV people told us, you can't make a 1-hour video in one day shooting. It can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at them going, well, we have to because we can't afford another day.
I mean, they're used to finicky actors and whatever where it might take a day and a half to make a 3-minute commercial, but we got it done, and the director was amazed, and we had the same director for the first three. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him for the last one, and he came to expect us to be able to get it done in less and less time, because, I don't know, you want to tell the story about moving the 4 inches, or?
Go ahead.
So the director, about halfway through the day, he tells, okay, the couple in the whatever color, just move back about 6 inches, and they move back 6 inches. And finally, he just says, I can't take this anymore. Whenever I tell you people to do something, you do exactly what I say. And Betsy says, well, their hobby is following directions. and then he finally got it.
That's great. Can you tell us a little bit about the reaction, the dancers' reactions to the videos?
Well, it gave me a very, very small taste of what real fame is. I don't mean fame in the square dance world. I mean fame, as the big superstars in the entertainment business get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were people who came up to me everywhere at different venues, not always at a square dance. I had a lady one time who came into a changing room in a woman's department store. Oh, I know you. You're Betsy Cotta. I'm trying to figure out where I know her from. I didn't. She had the video.
Oh.
That's great.
And you decide you don't want real fame after that.
I can understand some of the pitfalls.
Yeah, I bet.
I can understand some of the pitfalls. But what is really heartwarming is how many people feel that because of the videos, were able to stay in square dancing and be comfortable. Because that means we did the job that we intended.
Right.
That was what they were intended for. And I have people still at the national convention who come up to me and say, oh yes, we will still review your video even though we've been dancing for, you know, 2 or 3 years now. It makes us feel comfortable.
Nice.
I just mailed one, last week where a fellow said, I need another, I think it was the basic second half because I wore mine out.
Oh wow.
I gave him the wholesale price since it was a replacement.
Mm-hmm. So. That's great. I have had people who, when I've called out of town, who know that I know you and will ask me, she seems just so professional on the videos. What's she like in person? Well, she's a real person and she's very nice and you should sit down and have dinner with her. Come to the East Coast and sit down and have dinner with her sometime. So.
That's funny.
Yep.
We had the one person come up to us. It was at a national convention. I don't remember where. But he said, oh, Betsy, you come into my bedroom every night.
I'm like, excuse me?
What? And that's, you know, they would get home after the lessons and they would, before they went to sleep, they would review what they had learned.
Oh. Betsy got in. Johnny Carson, in your room at night.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
So, Roy, have you ever considered or have you put out round dance teaching tapes or teaching lessons?
I've been approached numerous times, and there were a couple of problems. Initially, it was simply financial. I mean, basically each of the, you know, to do it professionally the way we did, it cost us, you know, $20,000 to $25,000 to produce each video.
Mm-hmm.
And we just didn't have the money. And then later on, the whole copyright issue came up.
On music.
Music. And mm-hmm. I really can't figure out a way to do a quality teaching video and get around the whole music copyright licensing thing.
Yeah.
Because especially the round dance leaders use popular music.
Mm-hmm.
And
I see.
When Roy was doing one of his dances that he wrote, and they were still pressing records, he tried to get permission from Capitol
Records, yeah.
to you know, get the rights to use the music as it was, you know, to reproduce that music, you know, because that was, and he actually reached a person, a live body at Capitol. Who basically told him that under 8,000?
Basically, you know, I got to him and I wanted to press 500 of the. It was a Nat King Cole record.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we don't do anything under 10,000 copies.
Wow.
So that kind of, you know, put a kibosh on that.
Yeah.
But so I, you know, I would like to, but the thing is, Round the Lab has their, they're not teaching videos, but they're reference videos that are actually good quality. So I promote them and get my dancers to go. They have DVDs, and now they actually have everything on a. You can buy it all on a flash drive, loaded into your computer.
Hmm.
So I might like to in the future, but I would have to do some real research and pick only music that was, you know, popular music that was done before 1923. That's all public. That's public domain.
Yep.
You got to find a songwriter who wants to be famous, and you can write the round dance, and he can write the music, and you can both become famous.
I mean, yeah. So basically, the big problem right now would be time and the copyright issues.
Yeah.
That's part one of our interview with Betsy and Roy. I really liked when I said, "Where are they from?" Just the simple answer was New Jersey.
And New Jersey. New Jersey. And we grew up in New Jersey.
And all over New Jersey, yeah. And where do you live now? New Jersey.
New Jersey.
It's great.
And it was interesting to me that Roy started out his career as a landscape architect. That's really cool.
Yep, and his transition to teaching, which helped him with round dance teaching.
I just thought that it was very interesting that Betsy had no other jobs besides square dancing, and that she started dancing when she was 5 years old, and it's basically been her whole life.
Yep. Betsy starting out at 5 or 6 with her parents, and Royce got involved in dancing by, he was dating a girl and she got him to come to the dance. And then when he quit, another girl on the bus got him to come back to the dance. And then he dated all of the girls in the club, or virtually all the girls in the club. And then he married the teacher.
I thought it was nice that they pointed out that a lot of romances came out of that club, too. The club at Rutgers was a young singles club, and they had some romances for him, so that's great.
Yep, yep. I enjoyed the discussion of the their mentors. I had heard Mike say this before. A sequence is a sentence, and a tip is a paragraph, and a dance is a story.
Yeah.
And that has often led me to how I will structure a dance, and actually how I'll watch a movie. You know, here you are in the establishing part where you're learning about the characters and learning about the scene and learning about the plot. There's a lot of action, and then there's a dip right before the denouement. There is the cleanup at the end where everything gets wrapped up. I'll often attempt to structure a dance that way.
I never really thought of the whole thing being tied together square dance-wise, to picture from one sequence or one tip to the next, the continuity. I'm going to have to look for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to hear Bruce Bush's name again. He's a caller I've danced to in the past, and it's been a very long time, but to hear that he was one of Betsy's mentors, it made me smile a little bit.
I enjoyed hearing also about the videos.
Yeah, put all that money into a professional quality video is wonderful.
So what do you have coming up this weekend, Barb?
This coming weekend, I have a square dance weekend and some visiting with some friends and hopefully some good food in that stead. And
great.
You?
Kathy and I are actually celebrating Bird Valentine's Day, as I was calling on the actual Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's nice. Very good.
Thanks again to our guests, Roy and Betsy Gatta.
This is Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Goodbye, Dale. Have a good week, everyone.
And this is Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland. Ciao, Barb. Happy dancing. See you on the dance floor. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.